Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
In this podcast, we talk about the defeat of Brighton, the lowdown on Cameron Archer, look ahead to Millwall and answer your podcast questions. I'm Sean Dyche, we're the Borough Breakdown Podcast, and this is my Borough Match Day Chatter in a pod.
Want support? Curtis Fleming is there on the edge of the air. Fleming for Craig Hignett. Hit it, Higgy. Higgy hits the treble!
Abanelli coming alive again. Janino wants the ball played to him. Abanelli spots out.
Hello and welcome to the Borough Breakdown Podcast with Johnny, Dana and Tor. We are the Borough Podcast that gives you all of your Borough match day chatter in a podcast. In a 5-1 defeat for Borough against Brighton, the last time Borough lost five at home was against West Brom under Roberto Di Matteo, and it was 5-0 on 2009. The memories. I just remember Danny Coyne getting lobbed from about 40 yards. Guys, a big defeat. Borough crash out the FA Cup. Denimal, how are you feeling in three words?
I don't know. Probably just business as usual, really. I know it was obviously a pretty hefty defeat and we can't really beat around the bush. Borough were completely outclassed and outplayed from start to finish, really. Brighton dictated the game in defence, midfield and attack, but it doesn't really sting for me. I don't know. It just, I never expected Borough to win that game. I actually viewed it very similar to Man United and Tottenham last season. Brighton are a very, very good team. They are stacked with technical quality. And we saw that yesterday, the way that they were just basically, they had Borough exactly where they wanted them. And you can't have any complaints, really. So yeah, business as usual.
Tom, how are you feeling?
Yeah, my three words are just a difficult watch. I will say that, you know, Brighton were obviously great yesterday. First 5 minutes, you could just tell, like, literally none of their passing was going off target. It was all one-touch football. You know, the first touch, it was like they had Velcro on their feet. And, yeah, you could just kind of see it was going to be a very difficult game. I mean, I knew it was going to be after I watched them play Arsenal on New Year's Eve. I think it was. They played really well to try and get back into that game as well. But it just it still hurts when you see your team get beat by that much at home as well. Generally contemplated just leaving before the end because I was like, I can't even be bothered to watch us concede more. And, you know, I think by the end of the game, by the fifth goal, it looked like we'd given up. The ref had given up because it looked like there was a foul in the build-up of it, and he was just like, just play on. Like, there's only 5 minutes left or whatever. But, yeah, it was a horrible game to watch, to be honest. Wasn't really impressed by us at all and just can't wait to get back to the championship next week.
Yeah, and I think my three words would be a big step up. I think, you know, we're looking at Brighton yesterday and, you know, you hear in comments before the game, oh, it's only Brighton, you know, they're just a standard Premier League side. They're absolutely superb, like from top to bottom, you know, off the pitch and running the club to on it, you know, bringing in Roberto De Zerbi as well to improve them further, like they did under Potter. But yesterday they were just superb. The way they're in possession, out of possession, the way they controlled the game, and they just made things really difficult for us and thoroughly beat, to be honest. And there's nothing to be worried about or ashamed of or anything like that. Brighton were just really, really good yesterday. And that's kind of it, really. But we will dissect the game now, Tom, because, you know, Darren Lenihan wasn't in the squad. Paddy McNair replaced him, and it was the only change for Borough. But defensively, it was a quite a difficult performance for us. But how would you assess the overall performance against Brighton, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, when I saw the team sheet get released, that was, you know, a bit of a worry for me. Just because I think Lenihan's been superb recently, and I don't rate McNair as a defender. I think he's more of a midfielder, or, you know, in that Wilder system that we have, I thought that right hand wide centre back position was, you know, absolutely perfect for him, and what that role kind of entails. But I don't really rate him as part of a defensive centre back pairing. And then the game was just, like I say, you could see in the first 5 minutes how difficult it was going to be. From kickoff, you know, it going back to one of the Brighton midfielders, and they were just kind of stood there for a good 10 seconds with no one wanted to like press them too aggressively, I thought, which I thought was a good idea in the first half. I thought we were trying to avoid being, lured into certain traps from Brighton. We kept our shape quite well. I thought we were quite compact. And what I did notice was, I forgot his name. I thought he was one of the best players on the pitch yesterday. Was it Mitoma,
yeah.
Yeah. He was being left in a lot of space on the left-hand side quite a lot. But Tommy Smith was keeping compact, following the defensive line over at the right-hand side. And it was really allowing them to hit that big switch to him when they needed to. And he can just create so well on that left-hand side. I thought we had the right ideas defensively, but there were a couple of things like that where it just maybe let us down a little bit, but also I don't think we could have done much about it. I did think once we got back into it and made it 1-1, we could have gone on to get another goal, and I thought Jason Steele did quite well against Riley McGree. I would have preferred Riley McGree had kept his shot down, because I feel like he'd have had a better chance if he'd managed to do that. But from that point, I thought, you know, we can probably go on and get something else here. But after the second one, I think that killed our momentum a little bit, and then we just came back out from halftime and didn't ever look like the same team, really, which I think is strange to say considering what we've spoken about recently. You know, going in at halftime and being confident that we're going to come out a better team. I just thought they were too good yesterday. Hate saying it because I don't really, like I say, I don't want to see us get beat by that much at home. And then I find it quite difficult to appreciate the football the other team are playing. I'd probably appreciate it more if I was a neutral. And then I know there were people kind of after the game saying, you know, it's like you said there, Johnny, you said it was only Brighton. We beat Man United and Spurs last season and had a good performance against Chelsea. But what Carrick had said after the game was that we could have had a separate game plan to try and win this, but we thought it was more important to, you know, play the way we have been playing and kind of continue on that route, which for me is the only positive from yesterday. Long term, looking at it, that's going to be more beneficial to us than, you know, the way we did change game plans against like United and Spurs last season. We didn't go to United at Old Trafford, play, you know, absolutely peak Wilder ball and play them off the park. It was a difficult game, and we could have parked the bus yesterday and tried to get something from that. But I think it is more important to trust the process, keep playing the way we are now. And even if it is short-term pain from, you know, getting absolutely battered yesterday, hopefully within the next few years, that is going to pay off from making that approach.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, there was some good play yesterday, Dan, you know, to come back from 1-0 down. And Brighton on after that goal, it felt like the switch was flipped and Brighton were able to run riot. But how were they able to do that yesterday?
Well, I think it was just their movement off the ball. Very, very neat patterns of play. They were able to have a player drop deep, create triangles, bypass Borough's players. And I'll tell you what, one point that Tom made there about that big switch to Mitoma, I mean, Tommy Smith had a really tough afternoon. We'll get on to that in a second against him. But what epitomised the complete contrast, the difference between the two teams, is that I think it was Solly March absolutely pinged a ball over to that left-hand side and it fell right on the toe end of Mitoma. Dale Fry tried that in the very same half to Ryan Giles and let's just say the attempt was made. It wasn't a good ball. Brighton were able to sweep up, recycle possession and start an attack of their own. It was a really poor ball. And that just sort of, that was the narrative of the game, a massive, massive gulf in quality. And then they had the luxury of bringing Alexis McAllister, a World Cup winner, off the bench, and he comes on and he scores two. It was really, really difficult for us. I mean, you mentioned it, Johnny, the way that they were able to control the game. I thought in that second half, surely it's about 84 minutes. The game has to be nearly finished by now. It's 64 minutes when I looked at the clock. They had the ability to slow the game right down, even stop it dead at times. And I think that's what makes a good team, your ability to quicken the tempo and then slow it down when you need to. And I do agree with Tom, it was difficult to watch. But then at the same time, I was maybe not appreciating because we were getting battered, but I was recognising how good Brighton were in those patterns of play, and I think they're a team and a football club that we need to emulate, because who would have thought that there would be such a difference between these two sides when we drew against them for that promotion showdown back in 2016. The trajectory of both clubs has been very, very interesting. They've got it absolutely spot on off the pitch, which has culminated into a really good team on it, and we saw that yesterday. But yeah, as I said, it didn't sting me so much because I don't think that this is going to absolutely derail our season. It was a free hit for us. And I will reiterate, I think that was as difficult a game as the Man United and Tottenham from last season. We move on to Millwall now and hopefully we can bounce back, because we have bounced back under Carrick and I do firmly believe that we will on next Saturday.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, I was really impressed with Brighton yesterday. I think pound for pound they are probably one of the best teams in the Premier League to play against. You know, see you obviously have your top six and, you know, people that spend millions and millions, but for what they've spent and what they produce and how they play is really, really impressive. And I've got some stuff on them, so please forgive my Sean Dyche voice at this moment in time. But you know, I think collectively to what Roberto De Zerbi's done and refining and building on the work that Graham Potter did as well, and to make them better, was really impressive yesterday. Looking at the possession stats yesterday, they had 93% successful passes, 68% possession, and dispossessed Borough 9 times in that time, where Borough dispossessed them 5 times. But they had a similar game plan to what they did against Arsenal instead of what they did against Everton. Against Everton, they played a little bit deeper in the press. But when we're looking at them against Middlesbrough, they played really, really high up the pitch. And their aim for this game was to have width to pin Middlesbrough in. So in that first half, you had your two centre-backs playing on the halfway line pretty much. And then you were trying to stretch Borough as much as they can. And they were playing in a 2-1-3-4 formation. And what they were trying to do was to win it in certain areas. So the win in certain areas was in the width and then in the central areas. So where they caused overloads was on the wide. So Lamptey and March on the right sides against Giles. On the left side, Mitoma, and I can't remember the left back's name. It's completely gone from Estupiñán. Yeah, thank you.
I only know that because I put him in my FPL team and then swiftly took him out when he wasn't doing anything for me.
Well, Estupiñán will be very happy to get an assist yesterday, because his shot was a lovely shot to McAllister, and his touch to bring him was beautiful. But anyway, the possession of what they wanted to do was to try and pin Middlesbrough back with our outlet and Giles and stretch us in the wide areas. So in the central area of the pitch, they were able to create space, pull us out of position and create chances in the middle of the box, which four out of the 5 goals yesterday came from that central area, from the wings into the central area, and Middlesbrough were just completely pulled apart because of the overloads that they had from the width. But in terms of the game itself, and where it was really interesting for me in the first half, but also in the second half as well, was the battle for the central area. Because if you look, I looked at Middlesbrough in the first half, we were trying to play really high. We were trying to play high in our defensive third, and we're trying to make it quite difficult. But there was two reasons why both teams wanted to do that. One, for Borough, was to try and get them on the transition where if they could win the ball, they'll try and play it in the half space, which I'll come on to in a second. But secondly, if for Brighton, they were wanting to get the ball, and if they lost it, they could recover it fairly quickly, stretch it out wide, get it down the line, and get it in that central area. But as for Borough, though, and, you know, obviously we do speak a little bit about the wing-backs and how we haven't been able to get much support because the lack of support from the wing-backs from McGree and from Forchester, and it's shown in the average positions that they were both quite central in that half space area. And that in itself caused Tommy Smith and Ryan Giles and Paddy McNair a lot of problems. But what Borough were trying to do yesterday was to try and win it. And you could see it from the forwards where Crooks and Dayak Pom, they were trying to peel off the defender, get in the half space, because that was the biggest distance between centre backs and the wing backs. So Borough could try and break forward. And that's how we did in the first goal, but we didn't really, we got the ball, we got through the half space, we recycled it, got out wide, and we knocked it in the box and scored. But overall, Brighton were really, really good yesterday. The control was really high, the press was very quickly, they caused overloads on the right on both wings, and that created the central space for them to score, and score five they did. But Borough did score, Tom Green, and it was Chuba and Giles connect again. Was that like a kind of impressive that we were able to at least create the chance, and also to most probably offensively statistical players were able to contribute and deliver once again?
Well, yeah, it's the best, the top scorer and the top assister in the Championship combined, and again for a goal against Premier League team. And you know, I think that was pretty much our first shot, wasn't it? Because they'd absolutely dominated the flow of the game up until that point, but. What I did think we were good at in the first half was trying to hit them on the break, which isn't something we're particularly used to seeing from us. It's usually the other way around. We're the ones dominating possession and we'll make the chances from there. But it did seem like that was at least acknowledged as part of the game plan for this one. I think, look, they were committing a lot of players forward. I did notice, you know, within the first 5 minutes of the first half, they had five up front and pretty much like two at the back and the rest in midfield. So I thought, the way we're going to get something out of this is to be quick on the break, and we were, and yeah, it was a good well worked goal. Giles obviously getting the cross in, and when the cross is going in from Giles at that height to that area of the box, you just know that Akpom is going to get his head on it at the moment. And yeah, it was a great header, and I'd say a great finish, but obviously bounced back off the post, off Steele's head, and went in. But you know, it's nice that, you know, Jason Steele's doing that against us now rather than for us now rather than against us. So
yeah, well, it's two former players in back-to-back games that have helped us contribute to us scoring a goal. You know, George Friend last week, Jason Steele this week. It's nice to see, really. I think, you know, we are paying them on a per goal basis, like, but it's all good, you know, that's what we want. But then I think after the game, you know, it's on maybe like one negative I think from yesterday was comments regarding Tommy Smith. I mentioned it there on the overloads, you know, the two fullbacks, two wingers on him. He had a really difficult afternoon. But do you think the negative comments were a bit too far, because he has played quite well since he's came in?
I don't know. I didn't really see them regarding Tommy Smith, but he did have a difficult afternoon. I think Matoma really caused him all sorts of problems, being able to take the ball in so much space. And obviously because of the way the Borough play, Tommy Smith essentially becoming part of a back three and a right-sided centre-back, it was always really difficult for him. Plus, it's a bit of a double whammy because Marcus Force is the one that's supposed to be providing him with that defensive stability, tracking back. It's not really Marcus Force's game, is it? So it's the risk that you're willing to take, putting a striker out wide, really. But it was really difficult for him. And I tell you what, it was probably the first time I did think about Dyke Steele, because as I mentioned there, the way that Tommy Smith operates in this Middlesbrough team is essentially playing as one of the three centre-backs. When Ryan Giles goes forward, the defence shifts over. And when Michael Carrick first came in and he was playing far at the back, I did think, oh, well, Dykstra probably not as suited to playing as a right back as much as a right centre back, because he probably needs to be a little bit stronger starting off offensively on his own. But then looking at it now, surely that role is perfect for Dykstra. And I will say Tommy Smith has been solid, and it's testament to him that it's taken me this long to have this conversation, because he's been a really, really solid, dependable signing for us. But going forward, I know Dykstra is injured right now, but going forward, maybe there's the potential for Dykstra to come back into this team in that specific role, because he's good in that position. But to go back to your original point, it was a really difficult afternoon for Tommy Smith. I actually think most of the criticisms after the game that I saw that I didn't really subscribe to was words bandied around like pathetic, embarrassing, disgraceful, all of these really hyperbolic comments. I just don't subscribe to that, because for me, it was a one-off game. We weren't ever going to, or weren't ever supposed to win it. Yes, we beat Man United at Tottenham last season. Doesn't mean we should beat Brighton. And it was what it was, a game with a massive gulf in quality. Borat are at the very beginning stages of the Michael Carrick era. We've got a manager that is probably still figuring things out, in all honesty. He's still growing, still developing. We have to make mistakes to learn. It was a big test for us yesterday that we did not match up to. And you know what? For me, that's okay. It wasn't great seeing us lose, but these comments, for me, I just didn't understand. Brighton are not a team that we are superior to anymore. And I think you can see that the way that they played, the way that they've operated off the pitch. So I wasn't really liking some of the comments that came through on BBC Tees yesterday. But, you know, football fans are very passionate people, aren't they? But I think a lot of the fans in the stadium yesterday, in fact, the majority of them, appreciated just that difference, because we can be a very vocal bunch, can't we? And there was still light applause at the end of the game. So fair play for that. But yeah, some of the comments after the game I thought were, I didn't like.
Okay, then. Well, let's move on to questions then, because every week you send us in your questions via Twitter at @boar_breakdown or email theboarbreakdown@hotmail.com or join our Telegram chat with over 290 Boar fans in there chatting everything but Boar. And the first question is from Josh. We'll come to you first, Tom. And he says, can we realistically go up and still as a Premier League team with this current structure at the top of the club?
Yeah, I think so. I think it's probably something that they do have a plan for. I honestly wouldn't be surprised with everything that we've learned from the interviews with Kieran Scott and, you know, the visions for the club going forward, that, you know, they are considering that it is a possibility that we make playoffs, we go up this year, and we've probably got signings in mind for that. That being said, we could go down, like, straight away again, but off the back of that, you get the parachute payments and you've just had a year of TV money. You can reinvest that in the squad fairly quickly in the Championship, carry on building and try and go back up. So ultimately, even if we were relegated, it would be a good thing to go up in that scenario. I don't think that the structure at the top of the club is going to be a reason that we go down or anything like that. I think, you know, the organisation, from what we've been told, seems much better than recent years. We've got a long-term plan, and it, like I say, wouldn't be a surprise to me if this wasn't already planned for this season, just in case.
Yeah, I think we're definitely like setting ourselves up to be a Premier League club again. You know, this is a new structure with Kieran Scott now, and he's trying to build out more of the recruitment side of things, the off the pitch stuff that we don't really see, and not just recruitment, but the way we manage day to day. But then also, you know, we've got like Michael Carrick, who's just brand new into a role. We need to upgrade the current playing squad if we were to go up as well, because it's such a leap in class now, the Premier League in comparison to the Championship. But what do you think? We've got next question from Jacob then, and he says, what do we need to do to be ready to take on these Premier League sides? I feel like it links a little bit to the last question, but what do you think we need?
Time. I think that's the biggest thing, because yes, you can have the money, and I think smart investment is important as well, but I think we just need time. You said it last week, Johnny, this is the first iteration of what Borough truly want behind the scenes and the structure. I think obviously we've had Kieran Scott for, what has it been, I think a year now, but collectively that structure just wasn't right under the last manager. And Kieran Scott mentioned it when Michael Carrick came in, that his work starts now, and this is really where we start to judge Kieran Scott. I think we just need time. You know, we've got a new head of recruitment as well, head of academy recruitment. We've got some new roles at the club. You know, Aaron Dank's coming in as well as a coach. There's a lot of newness to this team. Most importantly, of course, Michael Carrick as well. So it just needs time. It needs time to progress, to grow. As I said, to make mistakes, because you don't learn if you don't make mistakes to start with. So it just needs time. That, for me, is what it boils down to ultimately.
Yeah, and this is the next question as well, Dana. It's around defensively, our defensive side of the game, because Keith says, even when we're winning games, we struggle to keep a clean sheet. Do we simply have to accept our style of play will ship more goals than we'd hope? Or is there a prospect to solidify at the back without losing our offensive ability? So what do you think?
I think maybe the solution is a player profile thing, because as we have it now, the two centre midfielders are good at playing with their back to goal, playing on the half turn, receiving the ball in those tight situations, and then progressing the play through there. But when I think about that left-hand side of the pitch, I think, right, Daryl Lenihan has to cover two bases, really, because the way that Ryan Giles plays, of course, he's on the team sheet as a left-back, but he plays as a left-winger. And because he's so high up the pitch, when Borough get picked off on the counter-attack, there's a massive onus on Daryl Lenihan to be able to effectively cover that space. Maybe what we could look at in the January transfer window is a centre midfielder that can almost play that Jordan Henderson role, like at England and Liverpool, where because Trent Alexander-Arnold is playing, I guess, in a similar way to Ryan Giles, isn't he? So advanced up the pitch, playing as an offensive player, really, more than a defensive player. You'll see Jordan Henderson essentially play as a right back. Maybe that's what Borough need. And a Jason Knight at Derby, for example, I'm pretty sure he's been playing on the left for them this season. He's a workhorse. He's got a fantastic engine. He's a relentless presser. And I think he could potentially be the type of, let me say, an example of a player that we could look at. That way he maybe tucks into that left side, and then Riley McGree, his position's very fluid, isn't it? He could potentially drop in as one of the centre midfielders. So it's very fluid positionally. Maybe that's just what we need. Player profile, maybe looking to upgrade a Housen, for example, and giving something different in midfield. I gave an example there, but maybe that's just what it is. Rotating the pieces to be able to negate the issues that we see.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree with you as well, D. Like, I think it's very easy to point fingers, you know, say, Stefan, why is it not kept clean sheets? Don't look at that metric. But you know what I mean? You'll see it. But like, Stefan's kept clean sheet in a while. We're conceding lots of goals. Let's just upgrade our whole defence and that'll solve all the problems. It doesn't really work that way. It's a collective effort, isn't it? In terms of how you press, how we get, how we have our shape. But in terms of the last question, Tom, it's from Dom. he says, what's the plan at the back? 9 subs and no way of subbing the woeful McNair, who seems to have lost all confidence and fight, sadly. But What do you think? Do you think, what is the plan at the back? Do you think you're going to allude similar to what Dana said there? Obviously, McNair couldn't really be changed yesterday. I don't think we had another defender on the bench, right? Is that right?
Well, I was going to say...
Apart from Baller.
And Baller, yeah. I was going to say,
defence has now became a bit of an issue and an area where we've been injury hit. Because you look at, you know, three players who could play centre-back, Dykesdale, Clark and Lenihan, all out injured yesterday. McNair's probably fourth choice behind them, and he's having to play as a centre-back pairing with Dale Fry yesterday with no one really to replace him, unless you put Mark Baller there, who, although he's a very tall 6 foot one, isn't a centre-back. So I wouldn't be surprised if we look at another centre-back during this window. Because I was thinking about this the other day. Obviously, we were looking at three or four signings it was reported as. We've got Cameron Archer up front, Dan Barlasser in midfield. Apparently, according to the Rotherham Twitter and message boards, is like all but done. And then it's like, where are the other two positions we're recruiting for? Personally, going into this season, I would have thought that we'd have added another option to centre-back. And I think especially now we're playing a four, the only four that I'd kind of really want playing there are Fry, Lenihan, Dykesdale and Clark. And obviously three of them are injured. I don't know if we look at maybe a short-term kind of stopgap until Dykesdale and Clark are back, maybe get a loan signing in or something like that. But then on the other side of things, I agree with what Dana said about getting that sort of midfielder in who can cover for Ryan Giles. That could also help. Just like I say, I don't think McNair's suited to that centre-back position at all. I think we covered it a lot of times last year, and positionally, he's not great in that position. I think he's a good player and everything. I think he's better in the midfield role. But I think he did go missing for a few, goals against us last year. And it's not a position I want to kind of see him playing in. So either a stopgap loan sign at the back, maybe a permanent, or a ball in the midfielder who can kind of cover on that left-hand side.
I tell you who I would quite like. One of the two Brighton centre-backs yesterday, not Colwell, obviously. I mean, we're dreaming there, but Van Heck. Van Heck, I think, would be a good sign. I mean, he's right-footed. We're probably, in this conversation, we're speaking about the role that McNair was in, which was the left side. But Van Heck at Blackburn last season was a good defender. It's just what his situation is at Brighton, I'm not so sure. But, yeah, maybe a stopgap option. But I do think centre-backs may be less of a priority than the wings, for example. If we've got Barlasser, and I don't know whether those Rotherham message board posts have any substance to them or not, but if we've got that, brilliant. Different option in midfield. Need wingers, and then you're probably looking at a centre-back for me.
Hans Delcroix at Anderlecht, left centre-back.
That's all going to depend on work permits, though, isn't it?
It is, yeah. But I do love Hans Delcroix. I think he's fantastic. I find it very interesting, the defensive chat now, because, you know, it's when we were winning games, defence just doesn't get spoke about. Like a goalkeeper doesn't get spoke about. But as soon as you lose a game, it is the worst thing ever and it needs to be repaired straight away. But look, we know the underlying issues. We've seen us concede goals, but we're winning games, and it shows like sometimes clean sheets aren't all like, you know, if you're winning games, it doesn't really matter, does it? Right. But you know, now that we've lost a game, it's the worst thing in the world and we need four new defenders, a new goalkeeper and press more. in all seriousness, I like, look, we need to go on the market. We need to improve slightly and refine stuff a little bit, but that's not the worst thing in the world. You know, there's still plenty of positives to build on. But Borough have been in the market this week because Cameron Archer has signed for Middlesbrough on a 6-month loan from Aston Villa. The forward was Borough were trying to hope to sign the forward on a permanent deal in the summer, but we've got him on loan to help us kick us up to the Premier League, maybe, you know, who knows? Carinacha up top with Chubrakpom, that CA connect would be fantastic, wouldn't it? But Dana, what's your thoughts on the signing of Carinacha? Because he really excited you, didn't he, at the start of the season?
I like that, CA connect. I've always wanted a little, you know, like a SAS and MSN, yeah. Like maybe that's our own version of that. But yeah, I am really, really happy with Carinacha signing for us. I think as far as January signings go, I don't feel like he'd get much better than him. He hit the ground running at Preston, and remember, he did join them in January as well. So he can make an instant impact as they saw themselves. And I think if we can get him up and running, we'll get into the top six at the end of the season. I'm fairly confident in saying that because he is a brilliant player and he's very clinical. 7 goals from 7.2 non-penalty XG last season, which if I just bring my notes up, was the 81st percentile rank per 90 for non-penalty expected goals. If I look at FB Ref, he's just very clinical, you know, 7 goals from 21 shots, 4 goals in 4 appearances for England under 21s, I believe. I think a high frequency dribbler, over 3 dribbles per 90, which is the 85th percentile rank versus forwards in the Championship last season. I think when you have a dribbly forward, shall we say, the more dribbles that you attempt, the more that you'll probably not complete unless you're a Dama Traore. But still, just over 1 completed dribble per 90, which was the 68th percentile rank versus forwards in the Championship last season, still above average. And I looked into his stats a little bit more. A presser from the front as well, 0.5 tackles per 90 in the final third, the 93rd percentile rank. Illiman Njai was the top rank there with 0.69, so not too far away. And when I looked at his stats when I looked at a few of his clips at Preston, he linked up really, really well with Daniel Johnson. And I'm thinking maybe if he plays as that number 9, you can see a good link up there between Riley McGree and Carinacha. He does like to operate in the left flank and left half space as well. So we could potentially see him play in that Riley McGree position. But I am really, really happy with the signing of Carinacha. I think that is an absolutely brilliant signing. Whether or not it works out for him, I think Bora have made the right decision bringing him in. I wouldn't be surprised if we were one of the teams that were after him in the summer before Stevie Gerrard put the block on that. But I'm really, really happy. I think that is a brilliant signing. Ryan Law said about him last season that his quality levels are fantastic. He's bullish, strong, he can roll, and he's got that little burst of pace too. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do. I think he's going to be a successful signing for us because we've got the platform to be able to make sure that these signings and these strikers are a success with Giles. With that Pom being a good link-up striker as well, the two, I think, can play off each other really well.
Mm. And obviously yesterday, Tom, we didn't really see much of him given Brighton's about 99% possession in the second half. But what's your thoughts on the signing?
Well, first off, I just want to say that I found Denison dribbly forward for Carinacha far too funny there. Can we make that a thing? Kind of like target man poacher dribbly forward. That's not really but I was happy with the signing. I won't lie, I've not seen too much of him. I watched a couple of Preston games last season, including the one where they battered us. And I think he obviously scored that day, didn't he? So he looked a good player from what I saw, but I hadn't seen a whole lot of him. The Preston fans seemed absolutely gutted when we signed him, so that's already a good start. And then I was looking at some of the Villa fans' reaction as well, and they were kind of saying, you know, I thought he might have been in and around the first team. If we can just get him into the team and get him going, he'll like be a difference maker for us. There was another guy who was replying to a Borough fan asking what we can expect, and he said he plays like a young Jermaine Defoe. And I was like, well, if he's like a young Jermaine Defoe, then you can't go wrong with that, surely, because he was a quality striker. And I can kind of see what they meant from the brief appearance yesterday. He's very quick. Quite strong as well. Fairly similar build as well. I think he did seem a little bit shorter. But then again, I was at the top of the West Stand, so I don't know, anyone might have seemed shorter from up there. But but he did seem bright when he came on, and you know, he could have had a couple of chances, well, half chances in what we had. But I'm looking forward to seeing more of him, really. And also, we've got this graphic from Foreseeable, for anyone on YouTube watching, but you can kind of see the percentile stats from what we can expect from him. The high expected goals, a lot of offensive dual shots. So he does, from that, look like he is going to be the type of striker who can create a chance for himself and get past a player. Aerial duels is understandably quite low there, but I don't think we're going to be putting a lot of balls into the box for him to win headers from. And then you can see on the possession stats there, a lot of dribbling. Dribbling success only around the between the 40-50% mark, but at least he's trying it, and from that he's creating his chances and being able to kind of create key passes for other players in the team as well. So overall, I'm really looking forward to seeing what Archer has to offer.
I think that high expected goals, high expected goals is probably because he wants to shift the ball into these spaces. Obviously, I said dribbly forward there. He wants to be able to take the ball in these tight areas where he is getting marked. He wants to take the ball beyond and create those opportunities for himself that are probably high-value opportunities. He seems both-footed, in all honesty, when I was looking at his goals. They were right-footed goals, left-footed goals. I think that probably just maximises the potential for those high expected goal opportunities. So I think that is bringing it to have. And he's somebody that offers us a bit different. I think Michael Carrick said or told Cameron Archer that he was the missing piece. So in terms of, you know, playing off the shoulder, getting in behind, stretching the defence, I think Borough maybe lacked that a little bit. So I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I think, again, playing and operating in those left spaces could link up really well with Ryan McGree, or he could play in his position, but in a different sort of way. So I'm looking forward to seeing what he can do. I'm a really, really big fan of Cameron Archer in this signing.
Yeah, he's a pressy, dribbly forward, isn't he? honestly, I think it is a really good signing from us, isn't it? You know, I think he's exactly what we need in terms of creating our own chances. But I think the pressing stats and the defensive stats were really, really strong. It looks like he's able to press centre-halves or try and get the wing-backs into creating errors to create the space for us to get forward for Akpom to do that. But then also his finishing stats were excellent. And you can see why a lot of Preston fans are very disappointed to see him come to Middlesbrough. But speaking of a Preston fan, we spoke to Ben HD to get his insight on Cameron Archer during his time at Preston.
All right, guys, hope you're all well. So Cameron Archer to Middlesbrough. I'm not going to lie, as a North End fan, I'm a little bit gutted. I was holding out the smallest shred of hope that maybe we'd be able to tempt him away in January, but I think he was always more likely to go for a side gunning for a promotion like you. So in terms of the play himself, I think you're getting an absolutely cracking striker, especially for the Championship. Archer was probably one of the most natural finishers that I've ever seen at Preston. He really is that good. He had that instant impact when we signed him. He scored in his debut and he just continued to get better from that point onwards, really. In terms of the player, I think his all-round game really developed throughout his time at Preston. Very good dribbler, can go past a man, has that burst of pace, but probably the best thing about him is his movement. He was exceptionally good at playing off the last man, beating the offside trap, and just his movement in around the box and his ability to get a shot away and work an angle for a shot from the most unlikely of places. I think he really developed, like I said, in terms of his time here. There were a few conversations in the early months that we had Archer that, yes, he's obviously a fantastic finisher and player all around, but how well did he fit into our system alongside Emile Reese and sort of working that striker partnership? And it probably did take a little bit of time to go ahead and work out that, you know, both them wanting to be the sort of main man in the team and the player on the end of things. But in the final few months especially, I think the pair really worked on that partnership between themselves. themselves. And the perfect example, probably that game we had against you at Deepdale towards the end of the season when we beat you 4-1, you know, they both linked up for a goal. And we had quite a few examples of those towards the end of the season. And just thinking about the potential for Akpom linking up with Archer this season for you guys, I think that's a scary proposition. And I think with this signing, you've massively boosted your promotion chances because he is, like I say, one of the most natural finishers I've ever seen at North End.
So natural finisher, Presser and Preston are very disappointed. But then how do you think he can fit up front with Akpom? Because, you know, he's had a really good link up with Crooks, with Force. But can he do it with Cameron Archer? What do you think?
I think so. Akpom is very good at dropping deep, isn't he? And very good at being able to essentially pull centre-backs out of their intended position to effectively mark him. As Carrick said, as I mentioned on the last podcast, he's a marked man now, is Tuber Akpom. And I think that could be the perfect platform for Cameron Archer to be able to do his thing. It will be interesting from these Ryan Giles crosses, who's actually going to get on the end of them, because Akpom seems to be popping up in the perfect spaces to be able to receive those balls. And what Ben said there, the movement from Cameron Archer, I think it's going to be interesting to see exactly how they're actually going to link up. But in terms of what I mentioned there, Akpom dropping deep, Archer playing just off the shoulder, I think it could be a really, really good partnership. I just hope they don't get in each other's way when they eventually do get into those positions. But you probably actually see Akpom more on the right or leaning more towards the right side of the pitch, whereas Archer will probably be more towards the left. So I think they could really complement each other. And immediately when they came on, when Archer came on yesterday, he didn't really have much of an opportunity. He had ample time, not ample opportunity to be able to actually impose the game, such as just the game state. You know, Brighton just passing the ball, we couldn't get anywhere near it, could we? But there was a part where he dropped deep and he linked up really well with Housen to create a 1-2 or to create a triangle, and I thought that was good from the very little that we saw. And when he came on, he immediately went to Akpom and just gave him instructions. So I'm interested to see how that develops, how that link up plays out. But I do think that it can work because individually there, you know, Akpom's playing fantastically. I think individually I do really rate Cameron Archer as well. So I think we will see a good share of goals from them too.
Just to add on to that as well, I think based on what we've heard from Akpom before, I think especially after the Blackpool game where he's like, when I get the ball, I know exactly where everyone's going to be. I really wouldn't be surprised if Carrick already has in his mind, and Carrick and the coach and staff, how they want them to play together. And I think they're both that type of intelligent striker where they're going to take those instructions on board and they're going to know where they need to be for everything. So I'm also hopeful that they're not going to get in each other's way. And I think I'm pretty optimistic that, you know, the training ground work on this tactic is going to be beneficial for them both. And I'm really looking forward to seeing that link up.
Just off the back of that as well, a point that I missed out that I think has to be highlighted is Aaron Danks is here. And Archer's mentioned in both the interviews that we've heard of him, he's mentioned Aaron Danks. So in terms of that settling in period, having a coach that you have a really good and strong relationship with, you know, in your previous club or your, you know, parent club, I think that would be really, really good just to be able to make sure that he is embedded into this team. So I think we do have all of the tools for him to be successful. So now I'm fully expecting him to score 3 goals and then go on loan to, like, I don't know, some French team next season, much like Balogun's done, and score, you know, as much as Balogun has. But hopefully not. Hopefully he scores all of them at Middlesbrough.
Yeah, you took that comment right out my mouth then. I was about to say about Aaron Danks being in, but thank you for putting that in. But anyway, you saved my voice. Tom, you know, now we've another forward in the building, we've got options, Don. You know, there's plenty of strikers to go around. But what do you think this means for Muniz and Hoppy now? Do you think this is kind of them potentially moving on, but in different circumstances? You know, Muniz back to Fulham, Hoppy going up on loan.
I think if it's either of them, it's more likely to be Muniz. And I wouldn't be surprised if all the way through this window, in the background of us trying to get our own business done, we're trying to help him and Fulham facilitate another move somewhere else. That being said, our options up front now are great. I mean, I was looking at the bench yesterday. I had Muniz, Hoppy, and Archer all sat on the bench, and I was like,
Watmore as well.
And Watmore, yeah. So four quality options you can potentially bring off the bench and help kind of change your game. So, like I said, I think it's more likely to be Muniz. I would see Hoppy's still sticking around this season. I don't think he's going to go out on loan anywhere, but I think there's possibly more of a chance we see Muniz go somewhere else.
When does the MLS season start? It's quite awkward, isn't it?
Because
I'm just thinking, I'm pretty sure there was a report suggested anyway that an MLS team was interested in Hoppy before he joined Middlesbrough, so potentially there's scope there for him to go to the MLS. But yeah, their calendar is very different to ours, isn't it? So potentially not.
Okay, then. Well, let's move on to Millwall then now, because the Lions are also out of the FA Cup. They got beat 2-0 yesterday against Sheffield United. But they are flying in the Championship this season. They are in sixth place and Gary Rowett is doing a fantastic job there. So just to get some insight on Millwall, we spoke to Alex from That Millwall Podcast to get a little bit more about the Lions this season.
It's been a very good first half of the season for everyone associated with Millwall, and I think they'll agree with that. Any fan you ask will say, look, no one expected us to be as high in the table as we are coming into this game. I mean, we're going to be sixth coming into a real crucial period of games now, and it's also going to test if we can get to this level and test whether we really can be in and around those playoff positions come the end of the season. It's been an interesting season, really quite similar to last season for Millwall, to be honest. Very good at home, not so good away. Have begun to put some performances in away from home lately. The 4-2 win at Preston just before the World Cup, the 2-0 win at Watford on Boxing Day. We're beginning to see now what this team can do. They're beginning to settle. The likes of Zian Fleming been very, very influential. Andreas Vogelsammer has started to score goals as well. It's beginning to look key, and players come into form at a very important time going into, this is what I call that crucial part of the season, that main block now between Christmas and Easter. It really does get tight, get tense. But you look at the Championship table, it's ridiculous, isn't it? You know, 4 points separating, I think it's fourth and 14th. It's crazy. I actually mentioned probably two key players there, two watch out for come Saturday, one being Zian Fleming. Got 11 Championship goals. There's a lot of goals to his name. Very creative, will shoot from anywhere. Just look at his goal at Rotherham back in, I think it was October time. He scored a great goal up there, and that's what got Millwall a point. And he's got on some goal-scoring run after that as well. He's settled down a little bit lately, but still very, very influential. Pulls the strings for Millwall in midfield. Andreas Vogelsammer started to find the net as well. Got one against Watford, has looked dangerous since then in games over the Christmas period against Bristol City. He looked quite good. He looked good against Rotherham as well. So again, that's one to watch out. And also Tom Bradshaw, the only recognised striker that Millwall have got at the moment following the departure of Benik Afobe to Dubai. So that's another one to watch out for. In terms of the January transfer window, again, we've got to bring in strikers. Only one striker now, and that is Tom Bradshaw. So we've really, really got to bring in someone in those forward areas. We need someone out on the right of midfield as well to produce those crosses, produce the chances. So a little bit light in a couple of areas. And I think Gary Rowett knows that. He's set that for his plans for the January window to improve the squad with a bit of quality. So that'll be interesting to see. Going up to Borough, difficult place. We've not had too much success there in recent years. But I know that, I believe Borough scored in every game under Michael Carrick. So I think it's going to be interesting. I'm going to go for a 1-1 draw. A lot of the time you see Millwall, they don't always go out to win games. And I'm sure going up to Borough, they take a draw, come home unscathed and try and win the home game after. So it will be difficult. It won't be easy. Borough, especially since they've been taken over by Carrick, are a lot better outfit. And I think it will be a very tough afternoon. But I think, and I'm confident, the Lions can get a point out of it. I'm going to go 1-1.
So thank you very much for that, Alex. So one striker, the surprise to be in the playoffs, but they are playing well. And the 1-1 draw. Fifth versus sixth, who would have thought that at the start of the season? Are you surprised that Millwall are doing so well this season?
Not really, because I think they were doing, they were sort of on the same ascent last season, weren't they? They're probably at the same point in the season as well. And I think they have recruited quite smartly. I know Fleming is a data darling, and a lot of the you know, data enthusiasts were quite big on him. So I'm not surprised that he's been a good addition for them. But they're always a strange one, Millwall, because when you look at the team or the championship laid out from 1 to 24, never really expect Millwall to be in there. But I think they're probably, and I suppose we beneficiaries of this as well, of how weird the championship can be, and teams that you probably do expect, like Norwich this season, for example, the teams that you do expect to be up there and to be, you know, in the top two, top three, not reaching those heights. So maybe to answer your question, no, but also yes. It's a weird one, but yeah, they're a decent team. I don't think they'll end up in the playoffs, but they are there at the moment, and you know they're a difficult team to break down.
They need to be there or thereabouts, as a classic term.
Noisy game in the championship, Tom. Johnny.
Noise. I was going to say that. Yeah, Tom's noisy game in the championship. but how are you surprised at how well Millwall doing this season? But also, how do you think Borough overcome them as well?
I'm not surprised, but I think it's just because I always see Millwall as that type of club who just absolutely screams seventh or eighth. Like, and I was just thinking about this while Alex was talking there. It was like, they're always that club where they're like, they're up there, or they've done spectacularly bad and they're like down the other end of the table. And I was like, hang on, we're like that as well. Like, they're just maybe the London version of us, which is quite strange. But and it's the same kind of thing with Gary Rowett as well. I always thought he was a good manager, but thinking about it, I'm like, yeah, he's another one who just like I'd associate with seventh or eighth. So it's kind of weird. So I'm not surprised that they're up there. No, I do think we'll beat them, but. Yeah, it's just always in my mind. They're always just kind of like there and threatening the playoffs.
Yeah, and to be honest, I'm not surprised either that they're near enough there. But in terms of like how they play and how they set up, you know, they are in that 4-2-3-1. Seeing Fleming is in the 10. They are they get the ball, long balls into the channels, but also create space as well. And also they're very good from set pieces, which I'm not surprised with their defence being. You know, I think all of them are over 6 foot. 6 foot one, so I feel sorry for Mark Bowler. You know, well, actually, then again, he's taller. He's probably the smallest 6 foot one person I've ever seen in my life. Yeah, it's gonna be a really difficult game for us. You know, I think they've got some really good talent. Saville, you know, coming back again, but be interesting to see how they play up front as well. Obviously, the one forward now, maybe we'll be getting a forward in before the game against us. But we'll see. Dana. Save me from my voice. What's your predictions for Borough versus Millwall on Saturday?
I'm going to go 2-1. And the reason why I'm not going 2-0 is because Vogelsammer plays for Millwall, who is an ex-Bielefeld player. Elliot, who used to be on the podcast, visited Bielefeld, adopted them as his German team, and was a big fan of Vogelsammer. So I think Vogelsammer will score and blow Els a kiss, but I think we'll win.
He's going to say it'd be in the concourse, won't he? You want to see that?
Yeah, he probably will be, yeah.
He won't see that. He won't see that. I think he's still there, no? Tom, what's your predictions?
I would go 3-1. I do think we'll have a bounce back from yesterday. I see us winning this. You know, I remember watching the away game with you, Johnny, and I was just thinking, like, I don't know how this result is happening. I mean, obviously at the time we were rubbish under Wilder, but I was like, they weren't especially good at that point in that game. So I do expect us to kind of get revenge there. I'm going 3-1. I also just don't see us keeping a clean sheet.
Well, you know what? I see us keeping a clean sheet. I think we will win 2-0. I'll take 2-0, but I think it'll be a really difficult game, won't it? You know, the way that they set up, the way that they're full of confidence and wanting to be a bit aggressive on how we play. It's going to be really interesting to see how we react to the physical side of the game against Millwall. But, you know, really good sides. But I'll take a 2-0. But guys, thank you very much for joining me as always. And to the listeners and the viewers, thank you very much for watching us and listening to us. If you're not subscribed to Board Breakdown on YouTube, please do get our subscribers up. But also, if you're not subscribed to your podcast provider, do that. And you can also give us a 5-star rating. That helps us get found by other Borough fans, other Championship fans, and it helps us grow as well. But that's it. Borough crash out the FA Cup. It was a seagull in class. Flockinella. This has been the Borough Breakdown podcast. And that was all your Borough Match Day chatter in a pod.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.